Columbia. Columbia Pictures presents a Douglas Wick production, a Mike Nichols film, starring Jack Nicholson, Michelle Pfeiffer, Wolf, with James Spader, Kate Nelligan, Richard Jenkins, and Christopher Plummer. Eileen Atkins, David Hyde Pierce, Om Puri, Ron Rifkin, Prunella Scales. It's dusk. In a snowy mountainous landscape, the lights from a car become visible as it cuts through a forest. Music composed, orchestrated, and conducted by Ennio Morricone. As the road begins winding up a mountainside, the car negotiates the sweeping curves and bends. Written by Jim Harrison and Wesley Strick. Produced by Douglas Wick. Directed by Mike Nichols. An eerie full moon glows overhead. The 50-something driver strains his eyes to see through the fogged-up windscreen. With a heavy breath, he wipes his hand across the glass. He moves his head from side to side, straining to get a clear view of the snow-covered road ahead. Suddenly, he slams into a wolf that's stationary in the middle of the road. The animal's tossed up over the windscreen and behind the car, which skids to a halt on the slippery surface. The man, who's wearing a furry hat and coat, gets out and slams the door behind him. He looks over at the dying animal, which is lying in the middle of the road, trying to move its legs. He edges towards the now motionless wolf. He crouches down and looks along the animal's dark fur. He quickly scans the area around him, then picks up a stick off the ground. Tentatively, he pokes the wolf, but gets no reaction. He pokes it a few more times, but again, the animal doesn't respond. As the man looks down, the wolf's bright yellow eye opens, but it's closed again by the time he looks back. He edges around to the front of the animal and grabs its front legs. Suddenly, the wolf bites him on the hand and the man staggers back, frightened. The wolf runs off into the trees on the opposite side of the road. But now there's a whole pack of wolves baring their teeth at the stranded man. He runs back to his car and gets in the driver's seat. He performs an awkward three-point turn on the slippery road and eventually starts to accelerate away. The wolves just stare on, their bright eyes almost glowing in the darkness. Now the man's in a bathroom, gargling.
What time did you get back from Vermont?
You don't want to know.
Was it worth it? Did he sign the contract?
Yes.
You're a genius. How did you do it?
I did it the old-fashioned way.
What do you mean?
I begged.
Later, the man's dressed in a smart jacket and trousers and is walking along a busy city street. He passes a fenced-off construction site where most of the workers are taking a break. A little later, he's going up in an old-fashioned cage lift. In an office.
The Boston...
Morning, Roy.
Good morning.
Morning, Mary. Mary, what time is my doctor's appointment?
I have no idea. You have one.
Coffee, Roy?
Yeah. Are you sick?
A wolf bit me.
Just asked.
What time is this man's appointment?
Thanks. You going to Alden's party tonight?
Probably.
Don't you think it's a little Roman to invite everybody over to your house to let them know whether or not they still have a job?
Right. You have no doctor's appointment, but the doctor says he'll see you if you come in before 12.
What I came in to say is, if you get the axe tonight, I go with you.
And so do I.
Now listen, you need your paychecks. I forbid you to take any action if I'm fired.
Right. Maud Waggins is waiting in your office.
I cannot write for a conglomerate. You'll have to protect me, Will.
First of all, Raymond Alden isn't a conglomerate. He's an ordinary billionaire. And secondly, I'm not sure if I'm going to be here after the takeover.
What? What are you talking about? You're the senior editor. Your name, your reputation.
My reputation has been in question ever since I told Judith Kranz that no semi-literate 14-year-old would read her fiction.
Oh, bullshit.
Sit down, Maud. The good news is the head of marketing is my friend and protege. And if I leave, he says he'll leave with me. And since I know they don't want to lose him, they give me some leverage.
I leave with you, too. How's that for leverage?
Mom,
let's go and see your protege.
So, go do what you do.
Willie, just a man I wanted to see. Maud Waggins.
Do I know you?
Not yet, but you saved my life because upon reading What About Us Grills, my freshman year at Yale...
You realized you had to write.
I realized that I had to stop writing because I realized that if this was talent, I had none.
But how nice that that should stop you, and how rare.
I adore you.
I taught him to do that.
Yes, until I met Will, he used to punch my authors on the side of the head. Please come in.
Maud wants to go with us if we leave. You wouldn't happen to know off the top of your head what her contract calls for, would you?
She's obligated to one more book, and then we get a first look at her next two.
One more book. Good. How about an 80-page reminiscence of all the restaurants I've loved?
Well, whatever you say, there are no specifications in the contract.
Perfect. I'll start eating out right now. You are a rarity, Mr. Swinton. A loyal man with a great taste in authors. Bye, Will. I'll see you at Jason's.
Thank you, darling.
She goes out, and Will closes the door behind her.
You are such a polished ass-kisser, it takes my breath away.
Hey, and I kiss him like I see him.
A wolf in Vermont. I don't think so, Will. You weren't there, Ralph.
You sure it wasn't a husky or a German shepherd? I mean, after all, it was night, wasn't it? It was dark out.
full moon. And to answer your question, it was a wolf. I was staring straight at it. You don't confuse a dog with a wolf.
I see. Whatever you say. You know, it's funny. This isn't the first rabies shot I've given in the last few months. My wife's sister-in-law up in Oneonta. A raccoon chased her up on her porch and bit her in the ass. Last summer, the son of a friend of mine sustained brain damage from a snake bite. This kid was just sitting in front of his pool, and the next thing you know, he has brain damage.
Is he all right?
Who?
Your friend's son.
No, you idiot. He has brain damage.
Now, a car is pulling up the driveway towards an imposing mansion. Inside, smartly dressed guests are at a drinks function.
I do not think of Time Warner as another giant multinational media conglomerate, but as a bunch of decent, caring people, because I just don't believe money always implies ruthless ambition, Mr. Alden. Am I insane?
I would say so. Yes.
Oh, it's such a charming
place. So supposedly, because the rainforest is being destroyed so rapidly, all these new viruses are going to colonize throughout the world and destroy vast segments of the population. I'm only quoting the New Yorker, you understand.
Yeah, every upscale magazine tries to make the case that the world will end if we have no rainforests.
Well, you could make a case that the world has already ended, that art is dead, we're exhausted, that instead of art we have pop culture, daytime TV, gay senior citizens, women who've been raped by their dentists confiding in Oprah, an exploration in depth of why women cut off their husband's penis.
Well, time to fill up the glass.
Yes.
Yes, let's have a drink.
Later at dinner.
For God's sakes, relax. Eat something. At least get a meal out of this. I didn't like the food. All that red, rare meat dripping blood.
You're fun to eat with.
Mr. Alden would like to see you on the terrace, sir, whenever you're ready.
Come see the horse. Oh, Raymond. To know for whom the bell tolls.
We'll be right out.
It tolls.
We've got to see the horses.
Will, just remember who you are.
Just charm the bastard. You can be charming when you want to.
Why is he doing it this way?
He probably thinks it's kinder face to face.
Now, Will's taking a walk on the lawn with Raymond Alden.
Cigar?
Don't mind if I do. Thank you.
I want you to think about Europe, Will. Eastern Europe. Particularly. There's a whole new market opening up there. I think, God and currency willing, the entire continent will eventually cohere, both economically and culturally. I want that to be your area.
I see. Then my area will no longer be editor-in-chief of McLeish House after the takeover.
Look, it's nothing personal. Come on, you know that. You're clearly a man of taste and individuality, which I prize. These days, not only in corporate America, but all around the globe, taste and individuality are actually something of a handicap.
Well, just out of curiosity, on what basis did you pick my successor? Vulgarity and conformity?
Drive. On the basis of hustle, drive, and 52-carat ambition. He nagged me day and night till I gave him your job.
Well, for what it's worth, here's what I've learned in 30 years. Treat the authors as human beings. Don't stint on review copies. Don't hold them to deadlines, though. Only turn in rough drafts.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll remember that. You're a nice person, Will. Thank God I replaced you. And I hope you give Eastern Europe a shot. You better put that out. Horses don't like it.
Well, I think I'll finish it.
Go ahead. Good cigar, isn't it?
Will scowls and tosses his cigar onto the grass.
Spectacular. Just spectacular.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And you're right, this is the prize. Fort Knox. Just like his sire. Or the dancer, wouldn't you say?
As Will steps forward, the horse becomes unnerved. It rears up and pulls on its chain.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Will moves away with a look of discomfort on his face. He goes behind a bush and pulls at his neck. He staggers forward, clutching his chest with one hand and leaning on a stone plinth with the other. He slumps down and perches on a wall, his face contorted with pain. A woman sitting nearby carries a drink over to him.
Drink it.
He gulps down the whiskey in one.
Good boy.
The attractive blonde moves round in front of him.
Afraid I finished your drink.
What are you, the last civilized man?
I'm just embarrassed.
Half the people I know are on Thorazine, so your little anxiety attack barely rouses my interest.
You're very kind.
No, I'm not. I'm Laura Alden. Alden's my father.
I'm Will Randall.
Nice to meet you. You're not an easy guy to surprise, are you?
Not tonight.
He just fired you, didn't he?
Demoted, I think, is the word. I've been offered a choice between no job and a job no one would want.
So what will you do?
I'll probably take the job no one would want. I have the courage to be jobless at my age.
Old guy, huh?
Yeah, old guy.
He slowly gets to his feet.
Well, I better get back.
He stumbles and accidentally grabs her breasts.
Was that on purpose?
Oh, God. No, you're perfectly safe. I'm married.
And that makes you perfectly safe?
Yes.
She looks up at him, then smiles bashfully.
You better clean yourself up if you're gonna face the crowd. Here, wipe your face, it's all sweaty.
She adjusts his collar and wipes his face with her fingers.
There you are, dear. All ready for company.
Thank you.
As he turns and starts walking away, Laura looks over at the distressed horses in their stables. Returning to the party, Will wipes his mouth, then goes over to his wife Charlotte and Stuart Swinton.
How did it go?
Come on, speak. We've been going nuts.
Well, first let me say congratulations on being the new editor-in-chief.
What? Alden said that? What did he say? It happened this evening, just before the party. He called me, told me he wanted me to take the job. I said, Will Randall's editor-in-chief.
I mean, I didn't even know if he was serious. Look, Will, I didn't ask for this. I mean, it just landed in my lap. Say the word, I'll turn it down. What do you think I should do?
That's up to you, Stuart.
No, Will, it's up to you. I'll do whatever you say.
I'm afraid you're asking the one person in the world who can't advise you.
Shit, I'm sorry you said that.
That son of a bitch. Prick. I had no idea he was offered your job.
Why would you?
I mean, it must have been hard to turn down Alden's offer, but he could have told you.
Yes.
Why didn't you say something to him? Why did you let him walk away with your blessing, guilt-free?
Charlotte, please. I can't talk now.
May I just say one more thing about it? The last thing.
No.
The following morning...
Oh.
Despite the alarm, Will hasn't moved a muscle.
Oh, come on, it's 7:30.
He starts to stir.
Give me till 8.
Charlotte readjusts the timer on the bedside clock, then gets up. As Will drifts back to sleep, his nose begins to twitch and he starts sniffing. Later, it's nighttime when Charlotte goes back into the bedroom. Will's still asleep.
Will?
He wakes up and looks up at her wearily.
Asked you to get me till 8.
7:40 at night, you dope. You've been sleeping all day. Are you all right? How do you feel?
I feel good.
So I said, why assign me mastectomies and new trends in estrogen therapy? Why can't I do the article on genetic engineering and give Pete mastectomies? You know what he said? You'll do it so much better than Pete, you're a woman. I said, it's exactly like telling a black food writer she can only... Hey, what are you doing?
I have to catch up. I haven't eaten. I haven't drunk. I haven't made love in a long time.
A very long time. I think we ought to do it right here. In front of the dome of the Second Church Cross Scientist.
He lays her back in an armchair and starts pulling at the belt of her dress with his teeth.
What else can you do without hands?
We'll see.
What was in that stew?
They start to kiss passionately. Later, he's running water into the bath. He's getting ready to wind a new bandage around the bite on his hand when he notices the area around it become hairy. He stares down at the patch of coarse black fur with a shocked expression. Now he's leaning over the toilet, cutting the hair with a pair of scissors. Another day, he's back at the office.
Thank you.
Morning.
How the fuck can you drink tequila this early?
How the fuck did you know?
You kidding? You can smell it a mile away.
Oh, Mr. Randall, are you all right?
Perfect.
I heard about Alden's decision. I'm so sorry.
He turns around.
Yeah, was Stuart just in here?
Well, not just. About an hour ago. That's how I found out. Are you all right?
I'm fine. Never been better.
Later, Will's editing a draft manuscript when Roy comes in.
I just want to say I think it sucks.
Thank you, Roy.
Don't you do get contacts?
Will picks up his reading glasses and looks through them.
I'll be damned.
You've edited about 60 pages of this manuscript since Monday. What do you want?
Nothing. I just caught up on my sleep. I got 20 hours of sleep and I feel 20 years younger.
And so now you can see without your glasses.
Yeah, you've got a point.
Will goes to the door and steps out of his office. He looks around Mary's office with a steady stare. He moves out into the corridor. His gaze is fixed in the distance as he edges forward and begins to go down the stairs. On the half landing, he looks over the railing at the floors below. His ears open up and he begins to hear voices from all around the building.
Yeah, you can't trust anybody. I mean, even married people can't trust each other.
Oh, thank you.
We can offer $75,000 advance against sponsor.
You call?
You know what that prick says to me? He says, how could you drink this dirt? I mean, I put a drop of tequila in my coffee this morning, and he said he smelled it.
But so gone. It doesn't make sense.
Guide with him here, and we couldn't give him away in South America.
He's huge in Mexico and in Japan, so go figure.
It's incredible.
Crap, spark you.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Is it all in replace Randall?
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
That's official. Will Randall's out, Stuart Swinton's in.
I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it.
We'll take care of it. See you later.
I mean, who do you think he was? Sign your house or something?
How about you guys? All right, I'll see you later.
He goes back into his office looking troubled.
Give me Gary on the phone.
You mean like a manual on owning animals?
No, no, not animal possession. Animal possession. Demonic possession. The possession of the spirit by an animal.
Give me a minute. How many do you want?
One. The top one. The most respected one.
Vijav Alazeus wrote Something Wild, 1948. Old but breathing.
He's not some kind of mystic out of the jungle, is he?
No. He has a string of letters after his name. In fact, he's Dr. Alizeus.
All right, thank you. Can you give his number to Mary, please?
All right.
And, Gary?
Yeah?
Don't tell people that you had a drop of tequila with your coffee this morning. You didn't have coffee this morning.
Gary puts down the phone, then suddenly lifts it up and looks underneath it. Later, at home, Will checks his answering machine.
Hi, I'm just letting you know I got to New Haven in one piece. I'll be home tomorrow after the seminar. If you get hungry, there's still some stew left over from last night. Let's see if it still works, you animal.
He picks up a bathrobe, and upon shaking it out, smells something. He brings the neckline up to his nose and rubs the fabric against his face. He moves over to a window overlooking the city, which is a myriad of pinprick lights. Now, Will's running along a street with a look of serious intent. His eyes scan his surroundings, and his nose leads him up to a set of apartment steps, where he pushes a buzzer on a wall panel.
Yes?
It's Will.
I'll come down.
Will paces back and forth outside the ornate wrought iron doors. Stuart bounds down the stairway in his nightrobe and lets him in.
Hey, Will, what's going on? What is it?
Will walks straight past him.
Hey, what the fuck's wrong?
Ow! Jesus Christ!
Will bites his hand, then bounds athletically upstairs.
What did he...
Charlotte, surprised at seeing Will, soon turns to shame. She's naked under the man's shirt she's wearing. Will strides away, passing a speechless Stuart on the stairs. Stuart watches him leave, then goes over to Charlotte.
I'm sorry.
I'll get dressed.
With an annoyed sigh, Stuart slams his front door. Now he's riding the metal lift up to his office floor in a preoccupied daze. As he's getting out of one lift, Will's leaving another directly opposite, and his face is set in a brooding frown.
Morning, Mr. Randall.
Out your Rolodex, Mary. I've moved to the Mayflower.
Okay. Is that permanent?
Yes. Call Evelyn, find out if the deal with Alden is really closed or if they're still dicking around on points. Then get Roy to come in here and bring with him a list of every name author he's ever worked with in this house. Then get me a list of every name author that I've ever worked with. Then call Alden, see if you can get me an appointment with him this afternoon at his house.
Yes, sir. Is the worm turning, Mr. Randall?
The worm has turned and is now packing an Uzi, Mary.
It's about fucking time, sir.
Will steps into Stuart's office, startling him, then stands silently staring at him.
What do you want me to do? I'll do it. Resign today. Promise never to see Charlotte again. Just tell me what to do.
I want you to resign today.
Well, I can't do that.
Stuart frowns and thinks.
So why did I say it? I guess it's just a way of telling you how bad I feel about being such a shit. I love you, Will. I know how that sounds, but I do. And I know how much I've hurt you, and it kills me. I know I can't. You'll never forgive me, will you?
No.
Okay. But still, I'd like your permission to ask Alden to forget about the Eastern European thing and keep you on as senior editorial consultant. Will you let me do that for you?
I'm gonna get you, Stuart.
He shoots Stuart a confident smile on his way out. Stuart paces, then glances back at the door. Will startles Roy.
I have my office.
The deal with Alden is not completely closed.
What a fucking brilliant
guess. Mr. Alden will see you today at 12:30.
Roy, get on the phone with your list of authors and ask them if they'd like to form a partnership with us in a publishing house of their own. Tell them that we're leaving McLeish House because we've heard that the new unofficial policy is to push everything that sells, and this will get them, bury everything that doesn't take off like a rocket. Tell them we've got enough investors to get it off the ground.
Two things.
Go.
How many investors do we have?
I don't know. I haven't called anybody yet.
But you want me to say it anyway?
Yes.
Second thing, is any of this true?
Not yet.
You're my God.
Mary, we better start calling writers. We'll begin with Maude.
On an impulse, Will pops a pipe into his mouth, but then reconsiders. Now, his car's heading up the tree-lined drive to Raymond Alden's mansion. Electric gates close behind him.
Mr. Randall.
Excuse me.
Don't get up. I just wanted to tell you that I'm turning down Eastern Europe.
I more or less thought you would.
Nice seeing you again, sir.
Will walks out, and Alden gets to his feet and removes his glasses with a look of curiosity. As he's walking back to his car, Will's nose latches onto a scent in the air, and he stops to smell it. He follows it across to an area of grass where Laura Alden's riding a horse. His interest piqued, he wanders over. She's cantering around in a circle while a man rakes leaves a short distance behind her. As Will approaches, he undoes his suit jacket and smiles.
Oh, babe. Oh.
The horse is spooked and bolts off, leaving Laura sprawled out on the grass.
You all right? You all right?
Are you crazy? Huh? Do you have enough brains to stay away from animals when you know they're frightened of you?
I didn't know it was me that they were frightened of.
Well, are you an idiot? You nearly stampeded the horses last Monday. Can't you see that animals are disturbed by your presence?
Hey, sorry, I just wanted to say hello.
You're not hurt, I hope. You haven't fallen since you were 12.
I'm fine.
Well, here you still are. You get lost?
No.
We were talking.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, of course. Henry and Caroline are coming to lunch. I told them you'd join us.
Did you? What a pity. I'm having lunch with
Will.
Will. Oh.
It doesn't really matter to Laura what your name is, Mr. Randall. What is important to her is that you're unemployed and inappropriate, and I don't approve of you. Mm. Well, we're going to miss your company, my dear.
Oh, yes, I know. Shall we start cooking?
Laura leads Will away. They head along a path strewn with leaves and up the stone steps of a building. She throws open a large glass panel door and proceeds to remove her riding gloves in the lavishly decorated room beyond. Will's just behind her.
Your little plate?
It's one of the guest houses. I only stay here when I'm in town. I'm sorry, but I just realized I have nothing but peanut butter and jelly and a carton of milk. I'm afraid we'll have to cancel lunch.
Are you serious? Peanut butter and jelly's mother's milk to me.
Listen, whatever you think is going to happen isn't. Please don't take anything for granted because we exchanged a few words the other night.
I don't take anything for granted, Miss Alden. Except perhaps some small measure of civility from my hostess.
Now, Will and Laura are sitting awkwardly, eating their peanut butter and jam sandwiches.
So what do you do?
Why do you care?
I don't. I was just making polite conversation.
I'd rather not discuss what I do.
They sip from their glasses of milk.
You know, I think I understand what you're like now. You're very beautiful, and you think men are only interested in you because you're beautiful. But you want them to be interested in you because you're you. The problem is that aside from all that beauty, you're not very interesting. You're rude, you're hostile, you're sullen, you're withdrawn. I know you want someone to look past all that at the real person underneath. But the only reason that anyone would bother to look past all that is because you're beautiful. Ironic, isn't it?
In an odd way, you're your own problem.
He sips his milk.
Sorry. Wrong line. I am not taken aback by your keen insight and suddenly challenged by you. Shall we have the rest of our milk in the living room?
She moves past him and he sighs. A collection of black and white framed photographs.
Are all of these you?
Yes. My father keeps this cottage empty just for me, so when I show up, I'll have a place to stay that's as far away from him as possible. Pictures were thrown in by the decorator. He had a mawkish side.
Is this you?
My mother. She died when I was 12.
I'm sorry.
A young man in an album.
And this?
My brother. He died last year.
Yes, I remember he had some kind of an accident.
No, he killed himself. He was diagnosed borderline schizophrenic, and I guess he got tired of the title. He lived with me on and off.
Nice face.
Yeah. He was pretty nice for a little brother.
He watches as she leans back against a banister, lost in thought. Later, they're down by a lake that's bathed in warm twilight.
It's really something.
Isn't it? This is where I used to come to bury my pets. And this is where I realized that one day I would die. Standing right here on this spot, I realized that one day I would be over.
I want to tell you something. A few days ago, something happened to me. I was driving in New England and I hit an animal.
Oh, God.
A wolf.
In New England? Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive. And when I tried to touch it, it bit me.
Did you get checked for rabies?
Yes, no, I'm fine. But this is really going to sound insane. Since it happened, I feel as though the wolf passed something along to me. A scrap of its spirit, my blood or something. I don't know, suddenly my senses are all incredibly acute. I feel just so great. I mean, I'm just not the kind of person who walks around feeling great. I don't know, I'm different. More alive, stronger.
Sounds strange, but...
It's better than living in Bosnia.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say that whatever it is, if you feel great, maybe you should just accept it as a gift.
Well, I'm afraid it will have a price.
There is that.
She rolls her eyes, then gives him a coy smile.
Would you like to stay for dinner? If it's not peanut butter and jelly and I don't tell my father?
Yes.
Let's get back before it gets dark.
Cole?
No, but we will be.
Will suddenly doubles over.
What is it?
I don't know.
Here, sit down.
I think I want to get inside.
Well, all right. It's not that far. Here, lean on me.
No.
Oh, come on, don't be silly. You are talking to an almost professional psychiatric nurse.
She helps him away. Laura's horse is restless in its stable. Having laid Will down on a bed, she removes a thermometer from his mouth, checks it, then gives it a shake.
Elevated, but you'll live. Is this the same kind of attack you had the other night?
She smiles and lets him stroke her cheek.
And the nicest girl.
Are you hungry? Can I get you something to eat?
I can't eat.
Then go to sleep. Next thing you know, it'll be morning and I'll be at your door with coffee and eggs and toast.
And bacon.
Oh, you think I can't get bacon? Well, I just may surprise you.
I don't know where I'm going.
Someplace nice.
She pulls the sheets up over his chest, tucking him in, then gently runs her hand across his brow. This seems to have a settling effect on him, although his bottom jaw remains rigid. As he passes into sleep, Laura gets up from the bed and silently leaves. Wispy clouds pass in front of a half moon. A blurry image passes over the opaque celestial surface, and gradually Will's face becomes superimposed over it. He's lost in troubled dreams. His eyes flash open, wild and dark, and he smiles mischievously. Rising from his bed in silhouette, his hair is wilder and includes wolf-like growth on his cheeks. He steps over to an open window and, after a pause, leaps out of it. He lands comfortably and snarls, then proceeds with ease through the undergrowth. He pauses to sniff the air. His movements alert a grazing deer. Will stares at it intently. He lumbers steadily towards it, and the animal gets spooked and flees, leaping off over a log. A chase ensues in slow motion, with Will displaying animal-like dexterity to keep up with his quarry. With a single bound, he clears a high branch until he's right behind the terrified deer. The deer's ears twitch as it dashes along a woodland path, with the possessed Will not far behind, matching the creature jump for jump. They approach a stream. The deer streaks away. Having lost the scent, Will's forced to stop. His wild, wolf-like eyes dart about, and he snarls in annoyance. The deer slows down and stops in a clearing, unaware that Will's watching it from higher ground. He pounces on the unsuspecting creature, securing it in his muscular hands, before lifting it up and sinking his teeth into its neck. An owl looks on, and bats take flight from a tree. Will snaps the deer's neck. He lets the creature fall to the ground and looks around the woodland. The teeth in his lower jaw jut out with sharp canine menace, and he gazes up at the bats crossing the moon overhead. The next day, everything's calm in the forest. Will's lying on some rocks by the lakeside. The water gently ripples, reflecting the trees and shrubs on the shore. Water trickles over the rocks near where Will's lying. His face is smeared with blood. He opens his eyes, looking dazed for a moment. Then slowly he sits up. His blue shirt is drenched and muddy. Every movement and effort, he leans forward and dunks his head into the lake. He turns his head from side to side, then lifts it out of the water and shakes it vigorously. With water dripping from his hair, he looks down at his bloody hands in confusion, then wipes the blood from his forehead and licks it. A little later, he's running across the gravel driveway towards his car. He gets in the driver's side and speeds away.
Any idea how this happened?
None.
Well, you ever sleepwalk?
Not that I know of.
Sounds like you took a nice little walk in your sleep, fell down, and maybe knocked yourself out. Now, I feel some scalp lacerations back here, Will. You know, nothing bleeds like this scalp. Okay. So I'm going to make some arrangements for you to have an EEG and a CAT scan, which means you'll have to spend the night at Mount Sinai.
Out of the question.
What are you talking about? You could have a concussion or a possible blood clot.
No one feels this good with a concussion and a blood clot.
Now, Will strides into the publishing house. He finds Alden and another man sitting in a meeting room.
Mr. Alden, so good to see you again so soon, sir.
It's nice to see you too, Will. Robert Keyes, my counsel.
Counselor, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Reynolds.
Sit down, Will, sit down.
Thank you.
You're deliberately goading the top writers of this house to leave and become part of some totally improbable scheme that hasn't a hope of succeeding. And being writers, they're too goddamn stupid to know it.
Well, you may very well be right, Mr. Alden. They might not succeed, but it won't hurt them to try. And if they fail, any publisher will be glad to get them.
And you with them?
Yes. That would be part of the deal, but it really doesn't matter whether we start a new publishing house or go to another publishing house. At least seven first-rate writers are going to leave McLeish House because they don't like its policies. When I issue that press release, which I intend to do in the morning, the reputation and value of this firm will take a giant nosedive.
Well, you're a worse son of a bitch than Stewart.
Yeah. But I still have those two big drawbacks, taste and individuality.
Maybe I can overlook them.
Alden smiles back at him. Then he stands up and pops a sweet into his mouth. Crunching on it, he makes his way over to the window and stares out.
All right. Call it off. Keep your job. I'd never have fired you in the first place if I'd known you were this ruthless.
Thank you. But before I do anything, I want a deal memo granting me additional powers and additional monies, and I want it by tomorrow morning.
I won't agree to that.
Oh, yes, you will. I'd do it anyway. What do I know about publishing? I'll tell Stewart.
Don't. Don't tell anyone until the deal is signed. Then I'll tell Stewart.
Will steps into his office and gives Mary a thumbs up. Then he picks the meat out of her sandwich.
Were you able to reach Miss Alden?
Not yet.
Any appointments?
Dr. Vijay Valazayas at 4. Oh. He's called 3 times to make certain that you're coming, and he sounds like he's over 100. If you want a counsel, you'll have to do it yourself.
Dr. Vijav opens his door.
I was just boiling water for tea. Perhaps you will join me. Come.
I won't take much of your time.
No, Jake, I am not a busy man. So you were bitten by a wolf in Vermont on March 8th. Very auspicious.
Very suspicious?
Auspicious. Very auspicious. On March 8th, the moon was the closest it's been to Earth in 100 years.
Oh. Well, that is auspicious. What I'm curious about is, if my symptoms could be related to the release of a chemical caused by an animal bite, something that medical science has overlooked, but that tribal lore might possibly...
Well, among my people, there is only one explanation for your symptoms, is that you are becoming a wolf.
But, you don't believe that.
Why not? We must remember that man has only been out of the jungle for 25,000 years. Please, sit down. Life is mystical. It's just that we are used to it. Catholicism itself, a religion so mystical that even primitive tribes can be converted to it. The stigmata, the return after death, the day of judgment, heaven and hell, all so incredible and so ordinary. But we are used to it. Honey, sugar, sweet and low.
Yeah, anything. Honey.
Honey. Yeah. I don't have honey. I just asked out of habit. You should be visiting a shaman who will tell you the rules. I can only tell you the theory.
Well, do you know any of the rules?
Very few. Only that the wolf rests by day and prowls by night, but is always present. That he grows inside a man he's entered until the first full moon. And then he consumes him, killing all but his nature and his heart.
Will takes a sip of tea.
Not a great prognosis.
But of course, not all who are bitten change. There must be something wild within. An analogue of the wolf.
Well, that lets me out. Among my people, I'm known as the guy least likely to have an analogue of the wolf.
Your people are wrong, Mr. Randall. Sometimes one doesn't even need to be bitten. Only the passion of the wolf is enough.
Dr. Alizeus, what I would like to know, and not that I subscribe to any of this.
Neither do I, really. Only to the possibility.
But out of curiosity, is there supposed to be any way to stop this metamorphosis?
Supposedly there are herbs and rites and amulets. I don't know the rites, I don't have the herbs. But I did find something for you when you called. Yes.
He pulls out a silver medallion.
This is one of the most powerful amulets, which must be worn next to the skin and never taken off. If it works, there is said to be a great pain and weakness while the wolf struggles to emerge, and charm holds him at bay, sometimes drives him out. I have no idea if any of it is true, but it's yours.
Oh, no,
it's a gift. And in return, I would like a favor from you.
It's in my power.
I was recently told that I'm dying. Speaking of mystical and terrifying experiences, I would like you to bite me.
What?
I would like you to bite me. I can't ask you to transform me with your passions, or I ask you to honor me with your bite. and I too will become a demon wolf. You'd rather be damned than die. Damnation is not a part of my system of beliefs. The demon wolf is not evil unless the man he's bitten is evil. And it feels good to be wolf, doesn't it? Power without guilt, love without doubt.
He stands up and holds out his hands so that they hover near Will's mouth. Will stares at them for a long moment.
Excuse me, I just can't.
The doctor lowers his hands and smiles.
I understand. You keep the amulet, and if you decide to believe, perhaps you will give me your gift. It has been a privilege. I've never seen one like you.
Will looks a little bemused. Later, he arrives back at his hotel. He steps into his room, glancing left and right, then puts his keys down on the dressing table and stares at his reflection in the mirror. He sticks out his tongue, then empties his pockets and holds up the amulet the doctor gave him. He twirls it round, then with a doubtful look, hangs it over his mirror and sets it swinging from side to side.
Hello?
Laura?
I've been trying to call you.
Laura hangs up on him. He dials again.
Don't hang up.
Will you let me explain?
No.
Why?
Because first of all, I'm not a fan of men who mysteriously disappear in the morning.
Hey, listen to me. I had an accident, goddammit. I sleepwalked last night.
I hit my head and knocked myself out, and I drove to the doctor's at 6 o'clock this morning.
But it didn't occur to you to come back to the cottage and tell me?
No, it didn't occur to me to come knocking on the door of your cottage at 6 o'clock in the morning with a scalp wound and ask you to take care of me again.
And finish drying. The sound of that towel is driving me crazy.
Are you telling me that you hear what I'm doing over the phone?
Yes, it's one of my new gifts. Laura, please, can I see you?
Can we have dinner tomorrow? I'm at the Mayflower.
I'll be at your hotel tomorrow evening at 6. You better be there, and you better look like you fell.
I will be, and I do. Room 825. What did you make? Make me for breakfast.
He hangs up and wipes his mouth. Tossing his napkin onto the coffee table, he gets up and wanders aimlessly across the room before stopping in front of the mirror and looking at his reflection again. He briefly touches the top of his head.
I'm not only the president of the Hair Club for Men, I'm also a member.
Lights from skyscrapers illuminate the New York City skyline at night. Above, the moon hangs 3/4 full in the black sky. Will's eyes open suddenly. He's lying on his back in bed. He lifts his head slightly off the pillow and glances round, then gets up and goes over to the window, where there's a view across the city and the moon on the horizon. He peers outside, shadows playing over his face. His eyes, now a strange yellow colour, widen at the sound of animal noises and flit from side to side. Outside in the city, there's the usual nighttime traffic moving along the streets. Behind bars, a lion roars. Looking possessed, Will's walking past the animal cages, baring his teeth. At the chimp enclosure, he stops. One chimp sticks its face through the bars and chatters at him, baring its teeth. Then, two police officers come running towards the zoo, jumping over the zoo closed sign.
Right, hold it right there. Put your hands on the cage.
Spread
them.
Spread your legs.
Spread them. Right, he's clean.
What?
He's clean. Clean. All right, put your hands behind your back. Hey!
Will shoves off the officer, then bounds 10 feet up onto a rock.
Did you see that?
He got my cuffs.
Will escapes across Central Park, only slowing down when he's sure there's no one behind him. Eventually, he comes to a complete stop. He glances round for a moment, then smiles to himself. As he walks towards a stone bridge, three men start to follow him.
Hey, wait up!
You got any money?
Well, we want to borrow some money.
Hey, yo, don't you want to loan us some money?
All of you?
Yeah.
We all need some money.
I've got about $1,000 in my wallet. How much would you like to borrow? $5? $10?
Cut the bullshit and give me the wallet.
Will attacks.
Shit!
One of the men scarpers. On the wall of the bridge, in silhouette, Will attacks the other two. Will picks up the phone by his hotel bed.
Good morning, Mr. Randall. This is Alice with your 8 o'clock wake up. You must have been a bad boy last night. I've been ringing you forever. Mr. Randall?
As a matter of fact, Alice, I was a very good boy last night. I went to bed, so early, I don't even remember.
At the office.
Big boy's here yet?
Yes, sir. Conference room. Deal memo in hand.
Will's at the head of a table, going through the contract. After a moment, he puts it down and looks at Alden.
Don't even pretend to have any doubts.
Alden hands him a pen.
It's a pleasure doing business with you, sir.
Will signs the contract. Later, he comes into the gents, where Stuart's at the urinals.
Will, I was just about to come see you, tell you I talked to Alden about the senior consultant position. It's yours if you want it. Plus pay, of course. So is Eastern Europe.
Well, thank you, Stuart, but I've had a better offer.
Really? It's wonderful. What house?
This one.
I don't understand.
It's fairly simple. I did the same thing you did. I nagged Alden until he gave me your job.
When? I don't understand when.
In my spare time. I've had a lot of it lately.
I guess I owe you some congratulations. I guess the best man won. Shit, I'm glad in a way. I mean, I couldn't have given it up, and I didn't like the way I got it. I hope we can work together without rancor.
You're fired, Stuart. Don't do it to me, Will. It'll ruin me. I know. But it's best for the firm. Give me a few months. Let me say I quit. Now, it wouldn't be best for the firm. You vindictive son of a bitch. The best thing for the firm is me. I'm the best thing this firm has, and you fucking know it. This is fucking ribbon.
Are you crazy?
No. I'm just marking my territory, and you got in the way.
Jesus. Stuart grabs some paper towels and starts to wipe Will's pee from his shoes.
Suede shoes. Asparagus.
Stuart storms out. Will steps down from the urinals and wanders across the room, still holding on to his new contract. He places it on a shelf below the mirrors, then looks at his reflection and turns on the taps. He feels in his pockets and pulls out a handkerchief. It's covered in bloodstains. Will drops it in the sink, looking shocked. He narrows his eyes thoughtfully, then reaches in his other pocket and pulls out a pair of fingers, one wearing a chunky gold ring.
Oh, God.
He drops them. He hurries out of the building, then goes down the street and into his hotel, loosening his tie as he goes. He finds Charlotte waiting for him in the lobby.
Will?
Yes, go.
Please, can I talk to you? For a moment.
Great.
Just a moment of your time. For 16 years, that's pretty cheap.
What do you want?
I want to come back.
No.
I have no excuse. I deserve anything you do to me. I'm just begging you to be kind.
Stuart, become unlovable now that he's out of my job.
I never loved Stuart. It was a mistake, Will. I'm going to talk to him. Stuart never for one moment meant anything to me.
And you think that makes it better? That you betrayed me over and over again with a man that meant nothing to you? To know that you betrayed me for nothing?
Don't be such a smug.
Don't touch me.
He shakes her off.
And keep away.
Charlotte backs towards the door, looking shocked. She leaves, not noticing Laura sitting in an armchair, with one hand over her mouth and looking thoughtful. As soon as Charlotte's gone, Laura gets up and walks across the lobby, glancing from side to side. Will comes into his hotel room and immediately focuses on the amulet hanging over the mirror. He takes off his jacket, then pulls his tie off over his neck and moves towards it. He takes down the amulet and places it around his neck, dropping it inside his shirt. He freezes. It's Laura.
Hi! I thought I'd just come on up. Have you been waiting for me?
I can't see you.
Come on, Will, open the door. You can't do this to me twice. Open it.
She sees a maid at the end of the corridor.
Excuse me. I wonder if you could do me a favor.
The maid lets Laura into Will's room. He's sitting on the bed with his back to her.
Please go.
Why? What's happened? What have you done? Where did you get those?
I want you to go.
No.
He's handcuffed himself to the radiator.
Tell me why you've done this.
It's getting late.
become dangerous, especially at night.
And you're afraid that when it gets dark, you'll attack me?
Yeah. I think I'm turning into something else.
Into the thing that bit you, into the wolf.
Yes.
Tell me where the key is.
I don't have a key. I don't even know where I got the handcuffs.
You don't have a key? Well, what was your plan? To sit chained to the radiator till you grew paws?
God. You almost make this seem like it isn't happening. I don't have a plan. I didn't think past not hurting anyone. I don't think there's any way to open these.
Well, you don't know who you're dealing with. You see, when you're a druggie and a delinquent, and you want to get daddy, you get arrested, you come in contact with the criminal element of society, and, well, you pick up shit, aha, that you think you're never going to need, and then one day you meet a guy who chains himself to the radiator and it all falls into place.
She's found a paperclip.
Why do you want any of this? Nightmare.
You mean instead of the gaiety and warmth of my normal life? I don't know. Because I like you. Because you're a good man. And that's very exotic to me. I never thought I'd meet a good man who looked at me the way you do.
You don't know I'm a good man.
Oh, yes, I do.
Then why is this happening? I thought only the evil were cursed.
Oh, no. Not at all. I could have told you that. No, the worst things happen to the best people. Oh, I almost had it.
She's picking the lock.
You know, you might consider that you're not cursed at all, that you're sick. I mean, there are brain tumors that can cause all of your symptoms.
Tumors? What are you saying? Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, if only that could be true.
How we lower our sights. I say we get you examined for physical causes before we take for granted that you're becoming. There we go. Okay, on your feet. Let's get you re-handcuffed.
Well, maybe it isn't necessary.
Mm-mm. Hands behind your back. There. Mm. Well, you seem pretty helpless now.
Unbuttoning his shirt, she finds the amulet.
It's interesting. What is it?
It's a good luck charm.
Really? Does it work?
Well, today isn't turning out too bad. Or.
She pushes him back onto the bed. As the sun sets over New York, the top of the Empire State Building glows a brilliant white against the orangey purple of the sky. Now the sky's pitch black. In Will's hotel room, clothes are strewn across the floor. Black stilettos and silky white underwear. The bent paperclip lies near the open handcuffs. In the bed, Laura's sleeping alone. Out in the city, the traffic flows as usual. Will's trudging through Central Park. He leaps up onto a rock, then bounds across it on all fours and stops. Two joggers stop and turn round to see if they can see where the howling's coming from. A homeless man carrying a bin bag looks shocked. Later, Will's lying in bed with Laura, both of them fast asleep. Later still, Laura's lying on her back, snoring gently. Will's hand moves beside her as he begins to wake up. He lifts his head slightly to look at her. Then he moves closer and studies her face, before giving her gentle, feather-like kisses on the cheek. Eventually, she begins to stir. Without opening her eyes, she tilts her face towards his and kisses him full on the lips. Two men in raincoats go up to Will's hotel room door. One gets out some ID.
Who is it?
Police.
Laura opens the door.
Detective Sergeant Bridger, NYPD.
Yes?
Is William Randall here?
Why? What's wrong?
I'd rather tell Mr. Randall, ma'am.
He's in the shower.
It's okay if I come in and wait.
Laura undoes the chain, then opens the door. One of the men steps inside.
Well?
Yeah.
He emerges from the bathroom.
There's, some kind of a problem.
I understand. I'm Will Randall, and I'm renting this apartment. If there were any complaints about the noise last night, I'm
but,
sure
Will,
there were
stop.
This.
He's not the hotel manager. He's a police detective.
Could I have a word with you in private, Mr. Randall? Well, that won't be necessary. This is Miss Smith, my fiance. She can hear anything that you have to say.
Laura stands next to him, and he puts his arm around her.
Your wife was found dead this morning, Mr. Randall. I'm sorry. She was murdered sometime late last night. Her body was found in the park.
How was she killed?
Her throat was torn out.
Sit down.
No, I want to stand up.
Laura helps him sit down.
Would you mind telling me when you saw your wife last, Mr. Randall?
Last night. Last night here in the lobby. About six.
Did you argue?
Don't answer anything else, Will.
I'm just trying to clear up a fact, Miss Smith. The clerk who was on last night said that Mr. Randall and his wife had argued.
So you already know they argued. These are not straight questions. Just refuse to answer.
Well, I would like to ask Mr. Randall's whereabouts last night. I mean, certainly that's a straight question.
Mr. Randall was with me last night. All night. I arrived at 6:30 and I didn't leave. You can check that with the desk.
I will. We've taken some blood and tissue samples from your
victim. We're trying to match him up with any known offenders, and it would really help if you would submit some blood and tissue samples.
Forget it. Not without a court order.
It's just a request. Huh? Okay. Well, here's my number. In case you want to reach me about anything. I would appreciate it if you came down to the station later on today and gave us a statement. Both of you.
All right.
And thank you for your cooperation.
Detective Bridger goes back outside to his colleague in the hallway. They head back to the lift and press the button.
He's got an alibi. The girl says she was with him all night long.
Airtight?
Depends on who the girl turns out to be.
A TV news report.
With her throat torn open, Charlotte Schuyler Randall, wife of the senior editor of McLeish House, the publishing company recently purchased by Raymond Alden. Police have no suspects in custody at this time. Elsewhere in the city...
My God.
Yeah, stunning, isn't it? I just hope they don't go after Will.
Will? Go after Will? Why would they go after Will?
He's the husband. That's who they go after when there are no suspects and they were separated.
That would not be great for the stock.
Well, you don't know that, sir. It could be a bonanza for the stock. It's heat. It's gossip. That's what I think publishing is all about.
Well, you handle it any way you think best.
You're back in marketing.
Thank you, sir. If they do go after Will, and I hope to God that they don't, but if they do, I'd like to put in another bid for the job.
Randall's contract gives him the right to name his own replacement, and he's named Roy McAllister.
I see. Well, would that contract still hold if Will was arrested?
Yes, unless, of course, he was convicted. So I guess you'll just have to keep your fingers crossed.
I didn't mean...
Really? What did you mean?
I mean that I love Will, and I hope to God that he's innocent. And if he is, screw the job. But if he's guilty, screw Roy McAllister.
Now, Laura and Will are together in a car. From the driver's seat, she glances over at him with a serious expression.
It's not much farther now.
What if I killed her?
What if you killed her? Excuse me. Aren't you the guy I spent the night with? You look so much like him.
I could have gone out after you fell asleep and not remembered it.
God damn you, Will. Why does it always have to be the worst news, the worst pain, the worst defeat?
Because. What if it is?
It's not. It's not.
Right. Detective Bridger's back at the station.
Well?
They've left the hotel. Night clerk identified the girl.
Who is she?
Laura Alden. How's that for an airtight alibi?
In the passenger seat of the car, Will's sleeping. One of his feet's resting on the dashboard. As Laura drives, she notices that the sole of Will's shoe is caked in mud. Her eyes widen with horror, and the car drifts into the path of an oncoming truck. She steers them clear again, and the noise jolts Will from his sleep.
Where are we?
We're almost home.
Jesus. Where did the day go?
Laura stares straight ahead.
You better duck down.
He does as she advises, as they approach the gatehouse to her father's mansion.
Hi, Miss Alden.
Hi, George.
The guard opens the gates for her, and she proceeds up the long tree-lined drive towards the estate. Another guard's walking nearby as she pulls up.
Stay down.
She checks her rearview mirror anxiously, then climbs out.
Hi, Tom.
I'd be careful of the woods, Miss Alden. I think we may have some wild dogs getting past the fence.
What do you mean?
We found a deer. Something brought him down.
Thanks. I'll be careful.
Good night.
Good night.
Laura's left looking unnerved. She goes back to the car, where Will's still waiting.
I want you to lock me up before it gets dark.
Then what?
Then maybe it won't happen.
I don't know where else to put you but the barn. Everything else has windows.
The barn sounds good. Barn sounds great. I'm gonna beat this, Lauren. I'm gonna beat this. Your phone is ringing.
How do you know?
I can hear it.
I'll be right back.
She dashes into her cottage.
Hello?
Laura Alden?
Yes?
This is Detective Carl Bridger, NYPD.
Yes, I know who you are.
And as you see, we now know who you are.
Did you just dial? How long have you been ringing?
About 2 minutes, but I've been trying to reach you ever since you left the hotel.
What can I do for you?
You can come in tomorrow with Mr. Randall and give me the statement that I asked for today.
All right. Do you still want blood and tissue samples from Mr. Randall?
I'm afraid they'd be useless. We seem to have messed up the tissue samples that we took from the body.
Why? What happened?
There was canine DNA found in all of the tissue samples.
So that could mean that the victim was attacked by some kind of animal after she was killed. Or it may mean that one of the lab assistants had a dog and she forgot to wash her hands.
As the shocking realization dawns on Laura, she drops the phone receiver and covers her mouth. She starts pacing and trying to compose herself, running her fingers through her hair. Then she returns to her car. But Will's no longer in the passenger seat. Alarmed, she leans into the vehicle. Somebody appears behind her.
You scared me. You were right. The phone was ringing. It was that detective, Bridger. Well, he traced me, and now he's threatening to subpoena the entire state of New York if I don't give him a statement tonight. Will you be all right if I go in?
Yes. Don't look so scared. Maybe there's happy endings even for people who don't believe in them.
Yeah.
I want you to know something. I've never loved anybody this way. I've never looked at a woman and thought, if civilization fails, if the world ends, I'll still understand what God meant. If I'm her.
Laura smiles tearfully. Now she's padlocking Will into a stable in the barn. Will's wild animal-like look stares back at her, and she leaves urgently. In the stable opposite, her horse is bucking fearfully, while birds are flapping around in the rafters. Laura's 4x4 heads along the drive. The late afternoon sun through dense woodland trees.
Laura Alden just called. She's coming in tonight. Sounds like she's been crying.
It's interesting. I just got a call from a guy who says he's Randall's best friend, and he wants to see me tonight.
You got a busy night, pal. The entire family of the kid whose fingers were torn off is out there. We got 5 new murders. What is there about a full moon?
More light.
Manhattan skyscrapers bathed in twilight. Laura focuses intently on the road ahead as night begins to fall. Her cheeks are stained with tears. She sighs heavily and wipes fresh ones from her eyes. Will's being contorted by the canine desires within him. Presses himself up against the bars of the stable and then staggers. The horse thrashes about in the opposite enclosure. Laura climbs up the steps in the bustling police station.
If a rich white boy had had his fingers torn off, somebody would be in jail by now.
I know.
I don't know anything about that. You're gonna have to call uptown. Laura Alden for Detective Bridger. He's running behind. Can you sit down?
Here, Miss Alden, take my seat.
No, that's all right.
Please.
No, I want to stand.
You don't know me, do you? I'm Stuart Swinton.
No.
I've been out to visit your father several times, but we never really met. I'm a very close friend of Will Randall's. He's a husband.
I know who he is.
Oh, you've met.
No, I just know the name.
Ah. Now, this is such a terrible, terrible thing. I'm just in shock over it. Will Randall was more than a friend and a colleague. He was my mentor.
And you were his protege?
Yes, a better word. It's a true pleasure.
He takes her hand and sniffs it.
What an interesting scent you have, Miss Alden. At once new and familiar, very familiar.
Thank you.
She forces a smile.
Were you bitten?
What?
Were you bitten?
What an odd question. What a very odd question. What made you ask such a question?
I don't know. People, when people are bitten, oftentimes it's on the hand.
What are you here for?
They want some information about the publishing house, and I'm standing in for my father.
Stuart Swinton! Come on in.
Would you have a drink with me when we're done here, Miss Alden? I'd really like to get to know you, and perhaps I could tell you a little bit about Will.
Thank you. That's very sweet. Of course, I'd love to.
Wonderful.
With wolf-like eyes, Stuart bends to sniff her midriff before walking towards the detective's office. He stops and turns back.
Don't break our date now.
Oh, I won't.
He winks, then heads into the office. As soon as he's gone, Laura runs out of the waiting room and down the stairs as fast as she can.
This is not easy. Will Randall is a very close, very dear friend of mine. And I'm not proud of what I'm going to say.
The detective picks up a pad.
Charlotte Randall and I. It's hard. Charlotte Randall and I were having an affair. It just happened. And Will found out.
The two detectives exchange glances. Laura's in her car.
Yes.
Two pilots?
Yes.
Will there be anyone else?
There will only be the two of us.
Just the two of you.
And I'll be flying with a sick friend. So if you would please have it as near the gate as possible.
That's no problem. So
long. Yes, in about an hour. Thanks.
The moon's full in the night sky. Will sitting against a wall, eyes shut, sweating, growling. He's wearing the amulet around his neck. On the amulet is an imprint of a wolf's face. Will grabs at it with one hand, revealing a red raw mark on the skin underneath. Now, Stuart.
He was like a madman. He was a madman. I mean, he bit me. He actually urinated on my shoe.
Urinated.
He told me he would kill her, and I didn't listen. I didn't believe him. I blame myself. I mean, if you have any idea of pinning a first-degree murder rap on Will, forget it. This was true temporary insanity. And if Will is arrested, I'll testify to that in his defense.
I understand.
Yeah. Is he... He's staying at the Alden place, isn't he? With Miss Alden. I really must find him right away.
Why don't you ask her? She's outside.
Yes, of course.
Laura Alden? Alden! Laura Alden!
She's gone. She left right after Mr. Swinton went in.
Excuse me.
Stuart runs off down the stairs. Detective Bridger shuts his office door.
We don't need her. Wake someone up and get a warrant for Randall. This is our case. The who? Did he say on his shoe or in his shoe?
As Stuart speeds through the city in his car, he's starting to transform into a wolf. Meanwhile, Laura's horse is munching on some hay on the floor of its stable. All's quiet in the barn, with all the horses feeding peacefully. As day breaks, sun streams into one of the enclosures. Will's lying on his back on the hay, eyes wide open. He smiles to himself. Meanwhile, Laura's pulling up at the mansion gatehouse.
George, no one gets through without a call! No one!
All right, Miss Alden.
She passes through the gates, then speeds up the drive. The security guard Tom spots her as she pulls up.
Just want to let you know you had some pretty restless horses there in the little barn tonight.
Yes, I know. It's all right. Steer clear of the barn tonight, and Tom, and will you tell the others?
Yes, ma'am.
Stuart pulls up at the gatehouse, and George walks round to his open driver's window.
Help you, sir? Oh, Mr. Swinton. I didn't recognize you.
George, I'm here to see Miss Alden, George.
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to call. May I ask your business with Miss Alden, sir?
My business is pleasure, George. Does she look like the fuck of a decade or what?
Back up.
All righty.
He reverses the car back across the road. Suddenly, he roars forward, hitting George and smashing through the gates. The guard slides off the bonnet and rolls under the tires. Still locked in the stable, Will senses something. He rattles at the door, then reaches through the bars for the padlock. Stuart stops, kills his headlights, then gets out. His jaw now covered in dense brown fur, he sees Laura moving behind the net curtains at one of the windows. He sniffs the air as he moves towards it. Tom approaches.
Hey, excuse me, sir. Can I help you?
Hello. I'm here to see Miss Alden. Can you tell me where to find her?
Gate didn't call to say you were coming.
Really? Well, I have a card and an appointment here.
Stuart sinks his fang-like teeth into Tom's neck and knocks him to the ground. Meanwhile, Will's trying to climb over the stable door. Laura hurries out of the cottage, carrying a brown leather holdall. She puts her bag in the back seat of her 4x4, then runs towards the stables. She trips and falls over Tom's bloody, shredded body. She looks at him aghast, then scrambles to her feet.
Hello, Miss Alden. May I call you Laura? Laura, if you scream, I'll kill you. I'll just break your neck, okay?
Gripping her tightly, Stuart kisses her neck.
This is a surprise. How did you get in?
I smooth-talked the guard.
Well, if anyone could do it.
Now, Laura, don't play any more games with me. You know, don't you?
Know what?
What's happening to me?
No!
You're playing games with me, and I asked you not to. You pretended not to know Will, and now this. Don't.
Don't pretend anymore. You know what happened to Charlotte, don't you?
All right. I do know, Will. And I do know what's happening to you. Will told me, but only after I asked if there were any more at home like him.
I'm not a fool, Laura.
I know that.
If you find me so attractive, how about my fucking you to death right now, darling? How would that be?
I don't know. I'd have to try it first.
Oh, you're very good.
Thank you.
She knees him in the crotch, then darts into the stables. He lunges for her, but she grabs a fire extinguisher and sets it off in his face. As he covers his eyes, she takes an almighty swing and knocks him across the head with it. But as she's running away, he leaps out of the smoke and grabs her.
Why, hello, Will. Locked you up, did she?
Stuart tosses the padlock key away, and Will tries in vain to get out. Laura gets back on her feet, but Stuart cuts her off by leaping onto the bars ahead of her. Then he drops down and grabs her. Raging, Will yanks the amulet off his neck and tosses it away. As Stuart hurls Laura to the floor, Will begins to snarl. Giving in to his inner beast, Will jumps onto the bars of his enclosure. As a horse rears up next door, he leaps up to the top of the doors. Then he jumps down onto Stuart's back. The two werewolves begin to wrestle, and Will manages to hurl Stuart across the barn. They come together again, and this time Stuart takes the upper hand, knocking Will to the ground. When his back's turned, Laura tries to attack Stuart with a pitchfork, but he quickly knocks her aside. Stuart stabs Will with the pitchfork and tries to make a run for it. With a grimace, Will pulls the fork out of his side and gives chase, leaping through the air. He knocks Stuart forward, sending him flying into a pond. Will lifts Stuart up over his head, then hurls him into the stone steps. Stuart tumbles down to the bottom. But when Will turns away, Stuart opens his eyes and comes to. Stuart spots a pair of gardening shears in a basket nearby and picks them up. He raises them above his head and is leaping towards Will when he's shot in the chest by Laura. Stuart plunges back into the pond. Will turns, baring his teeth. Face down in the water, Stuart's hairy, wolf-like hand slowly returns to normal. Her face contorted with emotion, Laura lowers her gun. She falls to her knees and covers her mouth with her hand. Will approaches and puts a furry paw on the side of her face. She flinches from his touch and stares at his canine features. He gazes at his paws and then looks to Laura. She slowly raises her hand and places it against his. They lock hands and stare into each other's eyes. He pulls back his hand and begins to move away, breaking into a run as he goes. Laura covers her face as Will runs off through the garden. Now, in dense woodland, he rips off his torn and tattered shirt. The full moon glows overhead. The next day, the police and an ambulance are at the mansion.
Daughter, all right? Have you found my daughter?
She is with you.
Laura!
Laura appears at the cottage door, looking calm.
What's happening? I heard gunshots. I was afraid to come out.
Are you with Will Randall? Where's Randall?
I'm not sure. I just hung up on him. As far as I know, he's on his way to Teterboro Airport. I told him I wasn't going with him, and he hung up on me.
We'd like to check the cottage. Of course.
What's happening?
They think Tom shot Stuart Swinton.
What?
Laura, Tom's dead. And George, too. He's run down.
Was Stuart Swinton's car?
He was after Will. I knew it at the police station. He kept asking me where Will was.
There's a plane at Teterboro chartered by Laura Alden.
Stuart Swinton was looking for Will Randall.
You remember this? He asked us if Randall was on the Alden estate.
Yeah, and when he found out that Laura Alden was gone, he took off. Remember, he just bolted.
All this might not have happened, but I was so dead set against Will Randall because he was after my daughter.
You were just trying to save me from a disastrous relationship. I would have left him within a week. He was much too tame for me.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw you together at the Mayflower. So I hope this time you will come in and give us a statement.
It would be my pleasure.
She kisses her father tenderly on the cheek, then starts walking away.
Could I send you something to drink, Detective? Another vodka tonic?
Another? No, thanks.
Let me know if you change your mind.
Well, how would she know what we've been drinking?
I can smell it. Smell it a mile away.
The detective looks around guiltily. Out of view, Laura's eyes have turned yellow, and she walks on with a steady stare. She heads up the lawn towards the mansion. Now rushing through the forest. Will's human face completely morphs into that of a wolf. He raises his snout and howls. His call travels back through the forest to Laura. A slight smile playing across her lips, Laura looks straight ahead with a steady stare. Her eyes become more intense. Their eerie glow is extinguished by everything turning black.